reported in satisfactory condition. Vice President Lyndon Johnson was not injured. He was riding in a separate car. Dallas police are believed to have surrounded the person who is suspected of having made the assassination. However, no arrests have been reported at this time. And a dragnet is out in at least two sections of the city, one of them where the incident occurred, and the other in the southwestern part of Dallas in Oak Cliff. The news is now official. At Parkland Hospital, President John F. Kennedy is dead, having been assassinated by an unknown person who was shooting a high-powered rifle from a window of a downtown Dallas building during the motorcade. Here at the Trade Mart, at first, most of the 2,500 guests who were gathered to hear the president were not aware of what had happened. The press delegation of some 200 or 300 members of the press from all over the country first rushed to the front of the building when the bulletin was first made known privately and in the corridors, and then rushed back, got their notepads, cameras, and left the building in a hurry. Most of them have gone to Parkland Hospital, where the president has just been reported to have died at about 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. After that, most of the guests in the building still did not know of the incident, and it was nearly half an hour before an announcement was made from the rostrum that an incident had occurred, then another announcement that the president had been shot. This was followed by two benedictions delivered by ministers here in Dallas. Dr. Luther Holcomb of the Council of Churches delivered one of them and made most of the announcements. Then people left, and the noises you hear now are of the porters and waiters picking up what is left of a luncheon that never occurred in honor of the President of the United States. It is not known just when Lyndon Johnson, the Vice President, will be sworn in as the new President of the United States. It is possible that that swearing-in may occur here in Dallas. Reports reaching Dallas from New York are that the New York Stock Exchange has closed because the traffic became too heavy upon the news that the president had been shot. No further word is known at this time. Stay tuned to the station to which you are now listening for a further report on these developments. This is Travis Lynn at the Trade Mart.
That was our Pool Network radio feed from the place at which President Kennedy was to have spoken this afternoon, and the reason for his trip to Dallas. He had arrived in Dallas only a short time before, and it was just about an hour ago that he was struck down by assassin's bullets as his limousine leading the motorcade drove through the streets of Dallas. The president and Governor Connally were both hit by the bullets of a high-powered rifle fired from a fifth floor of a downtown office building. President Kennedy was killed. Governor Connally was injured, but is not in serious condition. Mrs. Kennedy is still at the hospital. She was not injured. She was not shot in the assassination attempt and in the assassination of her president, her husband. A White House spokesman refused to comment on her condition. Vice President Johnson is under heavy guard and was whisked from the hospital by White House officials. President Kennedy was shot in the right temple. The White House medical officer, Dr. George Berkeley, said it was a simple matter of a bullet right through the head. The shooting occurred as the president and his wife, riding with Governor Connally and Mrs. Connally, were riding in the White House bubble-top limousine through a crowd of 250,000 people in downtown Dallas. Ironically, the bubble-top on the limousine was down for the trip through the streets of Dallas. For that reason, there was nothing guarding the president from the bullets that were fired by the assassin with his high-powered telescopic rifle from his ambush position on the fifth floor. The horror of the assassination was mirrored in an eyewitness account by Senator Ralph Yarborough of Texas, who had been riding three cars behind the president. He said, "You could tell something awful and tragic had happened." His voice broke, and with his eyes red-rimmed, Yarborough said, "I could see a Secret Service man in the president's car leaning on the car with his hands in anger, anguish, and despair. I knew then something tragic had happened." Yarborough had counted three rifle shots as the presidential limousine left downtown Dallas through a triple underpass. The shots were fired from above, from one of the buildings, as we have since learned. One witness, a television reporter, Mal Couch, said he saw a gun emerge from an upper story of a warehouse, commanding an unobstructed view of the presidential car. The president was the first president to be assassinated since William McKinley was shot in 1901. It is the first death of a president in office since Franklin Roosevelt succumbed to a cerebral hemorrhage in Warm Springs, Georgia, in April of 1945. And now my colleague, Dallas Townsend, has some further background information on the president's biography.
John Fitzgerald Kennedy has been dead less than an hour ago. And, of course, it will be left to history to assess his achievements as the 35th President of the United States. He began by dedicating himself to two important goals: survival of liberty at home and peace in a world shivering in an uncertain balance of terror. He invited the communist world to join in a new beginning of the quest for peace before what he called the dark powers of destruction unleashed by science engulf all humanity in planned or accidental self-destruction. Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate. That was perhaps the best-known sentence in Mr. Kennedy's inaugural address, which he delivered in freezing temperatures in Washington on January 20th, 1961. And if there can be any keystone or hallmark of his administration, it can be said that that was the keystone. Mr. Kennedy suggested that both sides explore what problems unite us instead of belaboring the problems that divide us. Let both sides, he said, for the first time, formulate serious and precise proposals for the inspection and control of arms and bring the absolute power to destroy other nations under the absolute control of all nations. And the president, in that inaugural address, which those of us who heard it will never forget, appealed to both sides to make use of scientific wonders rather than scientific terrors. In that speech, which he never delivered at the Dallas Trade Fair, and the text of which has been made public, the president lashed out at those who, he said, confuse rhetoric with reality. Mr. Kennedy would have said, and he did say in the advanced text of his speech, "In a world of complex and continuing problems, in a world full of frustrations and irritations, America's leadership must be guided by the lights of learning and reason, or else those who confuse rhetoric with reality and the plausible with the possible will gain the ascendancy with their seemingly swift and simple solutions to every world problem." That was just an excerpt from the speech that Mr. Kennedy would have made this afternoon in Dallas and was about to make when he was struck down by an assassin's bullet. Francis Cardinal Spellman of New York, who was in Rome for the Ecumenical Council, has just said that he was shocked and grief-stricken to hear of President Kennedy's death. Cardinal Spellman, of course, is an old friend of the president and his family. Mr. Kennedy, during the years that he was the president, again and again put the communist bloc on notice that he intended no softening of American purpose. "Let every nation know," he said, "whether it wish us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, or oppose any foe in order to assure the survival and success of liberty." Mr. Kennedy said the United States did not dare tempt the adversary nations by allowing itself to be weak. "Only when our arms are sufficient beyond doubt," he said, "can we be certain beyond doubt that they will never be employed." And while he said he knew that neither he nor anyone else of his time would live to see a new world of law that he envisaged, the president suggested that a start be made toward achieving a beachhead of cooperation in the jungles of suspicion. Mr. Kennedy wrote that eloquent inaugural address himself. In it, he said that the American people could bring to the cause of freedom an energy, faith, and devotion which would light the nation and set up a glow that can truly light the world. The president died before the world could really be lighted. Six members of the president's cabinet were out of the country flying to Japan when Mr. Kennedy was assassinated today. Just an hour and a half out of Honolulu, the secretaries were advised of the killing, and they immediately turned back. They are expected to go to Washington as fast as possible. The party was on the way to a meeting with members of the Japanese cabinet. In it were Secretary of State Dean Rusk, Secretary of Commerce Luther Hodges, Secretary of Labor W. Willard Wirtz, Secretary of the Interior Stuart Udall, and Secretary of Agriculture Orville Freeman, along with their wives. Among others on board were Walter Heller, Chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisers, and Mrs. Heller, also White House News Secretary Pierre Salinger, and Robert Manning, Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs. Mr. Salinger and Mr. Manning had already been in Honolulu for that meeting, that high-level meeting on the conduct of the war in South Vietnam, which was attended by Secretary Rusk, Defense Secretary McNamara, Ambassador Lodge, and General Paul Harkins, the Chief of American Forces in Southeast Asia. Presumably, all of these men will now return rapidly to Washington. We've had no late word yet on when Vice President Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, will take the oath of office, but we assume that it will be as rapidly as possible. I remember that when President Roosevelt died in 1945, Vice President Truman took the oath of office about 2 hours afterward in the old cabinet room of the White House. But regardless of when he takes the oath of office, Lyndon Johnson is now the 36th President of the United States.
Dallas, I would like to pass along a memo to our listeners and our stations along the network again, and that is a reminder that the CBS radio network will program continuously on the story of the death of President John F. Kennedy and subsequent developments until further notice. We will be back with more details in just a moment. We will take a 5-second pause now for station identification.
From studios in Minneapolis and St. Paul at 830 WCCO.
When Alan Jackson of CBS announced officially that the president was dead, the stunning, the tragic news was broadcast to a group of listeners under the WCCO radio loudspeaker in front of the station. Tears were shed, passers-by were visibly shaken, some unbelieving. A taxi driver who had stopped for a traffic light in front of the building banged his fist on the side of his taxi as the radio announced, "The President of the United States is dead." We talked with the men and women clustered under the WCCO loudspeakers.
Can I ask your name, sir?
My name is E.E. Dickinson, Grand Falls, Minnesota.
Yes. Have you heard the announcement?
I've just said a prayer in the St. Olaf's Church for the repose of his soul.
Thank you, sir. Can I have your name, sir?
My name is Joseph Larson.
Have you heard the news?
I just heard it. I'm shocked.
It comes as an unbelievable surprise.
This is something that shouldn't happen anyplace in the world.
You're right, sir. Yeah. Could I have your name?
My name is Ted Odenbach.
And you heard the news?
Yes, I have.
What does it mean to you, sir?
I think the most shocking thing I've ever heard of in my life.
Where did you first hear the news, sir?
I heard it in the athletic club while I was eating lunch.
On the radio or someone telling you?
No, a waiter told me.
I see. Thank you, sir, very much. I don't know whether you've heard or not, sir. The President of the United States has been assassinated.
I just heard it, yes, sir.
What does that mean to you, sir?
Well, it means... I don't know just exactly how to express it. It's really a shock. It's something that we didn't look for in this country.
It's been a long time, and we didn't think it could happen, I guess, sir.
It's happened before, but we thought Kennedy was doing so well that he could really do something for the country.
Thank you, sir. Your name, please?
Bodine.
From Minneapolis?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Could I ask your reaction, sir, to this startling news?
Is the president dead?
The president is dead, that's right.
Well, I wasn't a Kennedy man, but I think it's the most tragic thing that's ever happened in this country.
It's been many, many years since anything like this has happened in the United States. Do you feel that most people had come to believe that it couldn't happen again?
I couldn't have believed that it would have happened again. I just can't believe it yet.
And your name, sir?
George Derner.
Thank you, sir. Could I have your name?
Jim Richards.
I assume you're as shocked as everyone else is.
I don't know what to say.
It just kind of leaves you speechless, as it were.
Sure does.
Could I ask your reaction, sir, to this startling news?
I think the most terrible thing I ever heard of. I wasn't along with the man politically, but I think this is a travesty on our country who's trying to set a pace for the whole world as a civilized world.
We don't know yet, of course, why it happened, but there is no reason for this sort of thing.
There is absolutely no reason. It's terrible.
Thank you, sir. Could I ask your reaction?
Well, just a terrible thing, that's all. It's a shock that you can't get over right away.
Were you, by any chance, a Kennedy supporter or not?
No, I did not vote for him, but I would rather see him out any other way. That's the sure thing. I think it's terrible. He's not. I think he has done many wonderful things, in spite of the fact that I was not a Democrat.
At the Minnesota Press Club, where editors and newsmen from all over the state were gathered, the news was followed closely as it was broadcast from Dallas, New York, and Washington. The newsmen listened as the incredible details were unfolded. Some of them blamed reactionary persons for the deed. Others said it must have been a racist. There was general dismay. Republicans and Democrats alike expressed their shock and grief at the news. The news of the assassination broke at the Hennepin County Courthouse during the noon recess of the Thompson trial. We switch now to Arv Johnson at the courthouse for a direct report on the reaction there.
When word of the shooting of President Kennedy came to spectators during the luncheon recess in the Thompson trial, many of them clustered around the door of our emergency studios here in the Hennepin County Courthouse to listen to our radio. There were gasps of, oh no. Women were crying, and all during the recess, people remained listening, waiting for, and hoping against official word of the president's death. Just moments ago, as the Thompson trial was scheduled to resume for the afternoon, Judge Rolf Faucine excused the jurors until Monday morning. This is WCCO Radio News at the Hennepin County Courthouse.
As further details of the assassination in Texas poured out of the radio, people in all walks of life bowed their heads, many of them saying silent prayers for the president and the governor of Texas. Traffic on the streets in the Twin Cities seemed to be slow, and pedestrians with anxious faces asked other people on the street if they had heard the news. Flags flying over the Twin Cities buildings were lowered to half-staff in mourning for the president, and lowered flags were placed before the homes of many persons in the cities. White House Secretary Malcolm Kilduff said the president's body would be flown to Washington this afternoon. The official announcement said time of death was approximately 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. The Dallas Sheriff's Department identified the rifle as a 7.65 Mauser. The Italian-made army rifle had a telescopic sight with one shell in the chamber. The rifle was found in a staircase on the fifth floor of the building. The assailant had been in the building some time and had been eating fried chicken. General Manager Larry Haig of WCCO Radio announced that the entire regularly scheduled programs on this station is now being preempted for a special memorial broadcast, which will continue for the balance of the day. Briefly now to return you to our CBS correspondent at the Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas.
Pamela Turner, Mrs. Kennedy's secretary, looks very drawn in a state of shock. The president's secretary, Mrs. Lincoln, standing by. The body is now being loaded into a white ambulance in a bronze casket and will presumably be flown to Washington. I will try to find out. Just a moment. We do not yet know for sure, but presumably the president is on his way now. The president's body is on his way to Washington. The ambulance is pulling away with a motorcycle escort. And we assume that it will be taken out to the Air Force base where we landed just a couple of hours ago, when everyone seemed to be in such a good mood, when everything seemed to be going so well. The contrast of this scene is just unbelievable to one who's participated in what was such a terrific welcome and has ended in such terrible tragedy. And now the doors of the ambulance are closed, the bronze casket inside it. The ambulance is pulling away now from Parkland Memorial Hospital. This is Robert Pierpoint in Dallas.
The very latest on that, White House Secretary Malcolm Kilduff says that the president's body will be flown to Washington this afternoon. The official announcement in Washington is that the time of death was approximately 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, which was 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, an hour and 6 minutes ago. The Sheriff's Department in Dallas, Texas, identifies the fatal rifle as a 7.65 Mauser. It's an Italian-made army rifle, and the Sheriff's Department says it had a telescopic sight with one shell in the chamber. Three spent shells were found nearby. The rifle was picked up in a staircase on the fifth floor of that building in Dallas, on the fifth floor of which the assassin waited for the president and the governor of Texas to make their appearance. The Sheriff's Department says that the assailant had been in the building some time and apparently had been eating fried chicken while he waited for the presidential motorcade to appear. Reaction is pouring in. We gave you that report from Rome. Francis Cardinal Spellman of New York, shocked and grief-stricken to hear of President Kennedy's death, an emotion which we feel sure is shared by all Americans.
Dallas, we have a word from Dallas that a Secret Service man there says that Mr. Lyndon Johnson is being kept from view for security reasons. It is not known at this time whether Mr. Johnson has taken the presidential oath, but all of the federal judges in the Dallas area are at the hospital with Mr. Johnson, according to this late report.
I might point out, Alan, that any judge can administer the oath. When President Harding died in 1924 and Calvin Coolidge was the vice president, the oath of office was administered to President Coolidge by his father, who was a judge. Coolidge was in Vermont at the time. When Truman became president on the death of President Roosevelt, the oath was administered by Chief Justice Harlan Fiske Stone. Chief Justice Earl Warren, the present Chief Justice, is now in Washington. Lyndon Johnson may wait until he gets back to Washington to be sworn in officially by the Chief Justice, or he may decide to be sworn in Dallas by one of the judges there, who, as you said, Alan, have been converging on Parkland Hospital.
More reaction from overseas is beginning to pour in now. West Germany's new Chancellor Ludwig Erhard, who was to have visited Mr. Kennedy Sunday, was informed of the president's death while on the way back to Bonn from Paris by a special train. He promptly said, "The news fills the German people with deep grief. All those who had the lucky opportunity to make the personal acquaintance of President Kennedy, in particular the people of Berlin, are deeply grieved at this hour." And a short while before that, the Chancellor, on hearing the news of the president's death, had canceled the trip he had planned to make to Washington this Sunday. The Armed Forces Network in Europe, in a direct transmission from Washington, announced the president's death to American servicemen and their families on the continent. In the Vatican, Pope Paul was immediately informed. News of the murder was received with dismay at the North American College in Rome, where the Vice Rector, Monsignor Chambers, said that he would inform the American cardinals and prelates who were dining at the moment. Cardinal Spellman, a close friend of the Kennedy family, said, "I am saying the rosary for him now." The cardinal, attending the Ecumenical Council, said that Mr. Kennedy's death was a great loss to the country and to the world. And the Soviet news agency TASS carried a report on a flash basis on its international English language radio teletype circuit, announcing officially that the United States President John Kennedy has died in a hospital after an attempt was made on his life. The TASS news agency went on to say that the attempt, the assassination, was made by persons believed to be from among the extreme right-wing elements. Thus, the reaction comes in from around the world to the death today of President John Kennedy in Dallas, shot by an assassin in Dallas.
A reaction from Chief Justice Earl Warren in Washington. The Chief Justice says he is stunned and shocked. All of the Supreme Court justices, the Chief Justice and the Associate Justices of the U.S. Supreme Court, were in closed conference when news of the shooting was taken to them by a court assistant. The conference ended at once. Later on, a court aide spoke briefly with the Chief Justice in the office of Mr. Warren, and the aide said that Mr. Warren was stunned and shocked. It was Chief Justice Warren who swore in John Kennedy as President of the United States on January 20th, 1961. Only last Wednesday, the Chief Justice and his associates with their wives were guests at the White House at the annual reception given by the President for the Chief Justice and the other members of the court.
Dallas, a couple of more details, odds and end details, have come in on the assassination. An official of the Secret Service Bureau says the assassin's weapon appears to have been a high-powered Army or Japanese rifle of about 25 caliber. We had a different report a while ago. The entire building where the sniper was located was evacuated. People were working in the building at the time of the shooting, and a Dallas police inspector named J.H. Sawyer said the police found the remains of fried chicken and paper on the fifth floor, indicating, he said, that apparently the person had been there for quite a while, waiting for this moment in history.
Sad to say, Alan, no matter how many precautions the Secret Service takes, it's impossible ever to safeguard the president completely when he appears in public. There are always moments when the president is exposed to the attack of a lunatic, and we're sure he was a lunatic. Lucy Johnson, the 16-year-old daughter of Lyndon Johnson, was in class today at the National Cathedral School for Girls in Washington. I told Miss Lee, she says, to release her to nobody. No, rather, an aide to the vice president says, I told the school principal to release her to nobody but the Secret Service. Miss Taylor, Miss Willie Day Taylor, who is an aide to the vice president, now the president, and is a personal friend of the Johnson family, as well as a longtime worker in Mr. Johnson's office, went to the Johnson home to be there when Lucy arrived. The other Johnson daughter, Linda, who's 19, is a sophomore at the University of Texas in Austin. And as far as Miss Taylor knows, she is now in school there at the university. And now we're going to switch again from our CBS News headquarters in New York to Capitol Hill, and we'll hear now from CBS News correspondent Wells Church.
There is no doubt about the bewilderment that is here at the United States Capitol. As a matter of fact, I would like you to listen to the statement by Senator Everett Dirksen of Illinois, the Republican leader in the Senate, as he told of his reaction to the death of President Kennedy.
There are some things that are simply incredible and leave one absolutely speechless. This is one of them. I knew John Fitzgerald Kennedy as a representative, as a senator, and as a president for 14 years or more. And my last visit with him was on Tuesday morning of this week. I went early to present him with a turkey from the Turkey Growers Association. He was so amiable, so affable, so agreeable, and he looked in the very pink of condition, notwithstanding a rather rugged tour in the state of Florida. The thing that stuck in my mind most when suddenly he shouted to a lot of school children and to those managing this live turkey, "Don't take the turkey away until the children have had a chance to come up and see it." We visited about many things: politics, bills pending in Congress, the future, 1964, and everything that one can encompass within a half hour of visit. And suddenly comes this mortal blow that strikes him cold in death. I say it's an incredible thing, and my heart goes out to the family, and I'm a little bewildered by this turn of events, as I know the nation and the whole wide world will be. So first, my sincere sympathy to the entire Kennedy family, and in the language of the chaplain, as we had a prayer in the hope that transfusion might infuse recovery, that the nation still stands and the nation will live.
No less distressed, no less disturbed was the Democratic leader in the United States Senate, Senator Mansfield of Montana.
The passing of John Fitzgerald Kennedy is not only a tragedy for the nation which he so ably represented, but is, I think, also a mark upon the respectability and the responsibility of some of our citizens. this good, this decent, this kindly man, this harassed man who had so much on his shoulders and received from some people so little in the way of support in return, this man has now gone to his reward. And I will miss him as a personal friend. The nation will miss him as a great president. And the world will miss him as a great leader. One of the fondest memories I can recall is the cooperation and the support which the distinguished senator from Illinois, Mr. Dirksen, the minority leader of the Senate, gave to the President of the United States, a Democrat, time and time again when the interests of the nation were at stake. And I know how grateful he was to you for the many contributions you made, and I'm just as grateful, and the nation is too. Words are useless to express one's true feelings at a moment like this.
Mike, a person's perplexity is just too great in a tragic moment like this.
Senator Barry Goldwater, Republican of Arizona, issued a statement as he announced that he was canceling his weekend tour. He said, "It is both shocking and dreadful that a thing like this could happen in a free country. The president's death is a profound loss to the nation and to the free world. He and I were personal friends. It is also a great loss to me. Mrs. Goldwater and I offer our heartfelt sympathies to Mrs. Kennedy and the president's family." Now back to CBS News in New York.
Well, I'm sure that all of us could understand the feelings of Senator Dirksen, with whom the president worked so closely, despite the fact that they were on opposite sides of the political fence. And now our CBS News correspondent in London, Alexander Kendrick, is up. We've established contact in London. Alex, I wonder if you could tell us what the initial reaction in Europe is to the death of the president.
Yes, the news of the assassination came to this country as the dinner hour began here, and it shocked Britain into incredulity and grief. Britons, who had become familiar with the youthful Kennedy image and with his style of political leadership, were perhaps more shaken by the act of murder itself than by any meaning it might have or any possible consequences. How could it happen was the question I heard most frequently, and this in a country where, even though public officials are much more loosely guarded than in the United States, political assassination is the rarest of crimes, and where, incidentally, the strength of the presidential bodyguard has caused wonderment in the past here. Prime Minister Sir Alec Douglas Hume was traveling by road from London to Arundel for the weekend when the news broke, and he turned around and is now on his way back to Downing Street. The new Prime Minister was hoping to see the President in the new year. No statement has yet come from the government, but one is expected momentarily. Many Britons here, of course, have recalled seeing the President, at least on television, during his one-day visit in the past summer. And the political career of Mr. Kennedy and the personal fortunes of the Kennedy family are almost as well known, of course, in this country as those of the royal family.
Alex, of course, the President had many close ties with the British. He was a close personal friend of Ormsby Gore, the British ambassador now in Washington.
Well, these are all family ties,
of course. And the Marquis of Hartington, who was his brother-in-law, who
exactly
was killed in action.
Yes.
What is the initial reaction, as far as you can tell, right now to the possible policy turn that will be taken by the new president, Lyndon Johnson?
I think the British have over the years come to realize that changes in the presidency of the United States don't necessarily mean changes in policy. There is a firm and lasting relationship between the two countries which sort of transcend problems that occur from time to time, and it's on this basis, I think, of understanding and almost family friendship that they know the two countries will continue. President Kennedy was regarded as a good, although often a critical, friend of Britain, if not by all politicians here, certainly by most. And of course, he had his greatest impact here during the time of the Cuban confrontation just about a year ago, when the reality of a possible nuclear clash suddenly dawned on this country. But even though there was some dismay at what some people, and especially some newspapers here, thought was a rather intransigent attitude on the part of the United States, the British government firmly supported the United States in Cuba.
Alec, It's inevitable, of course, to wonder what the reaction of the Russians will be, the Russians who have lived for so long in a rather conspiratorial society where assassination is not the event of horror that it is in this country. What do you suppose they'll think about the assassination of the president?
Well, of course, they have almost as long a list of assassinations as we have in our history. But I think in the case of President Kennedy, there's more to it than simply the killing of a president. I think Soviet Premier Khrushchev had gone out of his way to cultivate an unusual kind of, I won't say friendship because that's not the word, but certainly acquaintance with the president. After their first meeting in Vienna and after the long-distance confrontation over Cuba, President Kennedy had come to embody for the Soviet Premier American policy, and I don't really think he will quite know how to take American policy in the absence of President Kennedy. I think it'll take some time for the Russians to gauge the situation and see if there is going to be any change. I think that Khrushchev, who has sort of personalized almost beyond recognition the idea of rule in Russia, has also regarded Kennedy as personalizing the presidential authority in the United States. And when two personalizations of that sort suddenly come apart, I think there'll be a little bit of disarray inside the Kremlin.